I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. We'll start with awards and presentations.
Yes.
Are we going up to the front?
We've got several service awards today. Jason Perry is our assistant vice president, new assistant in operations for the operations department. And we're recognizing him for 10 years of service to the organization. Congratulations. Stephen Austin Ryder is a electric meter technician in our operations department. We're also recognizing him for 10 years of service to the organization.
I'll let you know if I run into any trouble.
Matt Sullivan, the fleet service coordinator in our finance and administration department. Recognize him for 15 years of service. Jamie Boswell, come on up here. Jamie, the line crew supervisor in our operations department. We're recognizing Jamie for 20 years of service.
Well said.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for everything you have. I have back for you to have.
Our vice chair.
Congratulations. And there's so a little money.
Yes, money is always good.
Director Hemphill.
Congratulations.
And you can
stay off with
pay.
Yes, honey.
Yeah.
Okay.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Hearts.
Thank you so much. Awesome. Thank you.
We have more.
Congratulations.
For the month.
Thank you so much.
And Director Ortega.
Pleasure. Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Can you carry all that, Luke?
I sure can.
Thank you. really great to see everybody sticking around that long with us. Thank you so much. Okay, we go to hear the audience. This is the time when anybody in the audience wants to speak to us. They can. Anybody in the audience that would like to speak to us? If not,
the time to leave.
Are you all coming up to speak to us?
A good time.
I was going to say you have to take a number. This would be a good time if you want to leave. Just go ahead, get back to work. Those guys, that clears everything out, right?
You know, the employee of the month, her family was there. We should have taken a picture with them. You know, I didn't think of that at that point. You know, where they could have they were sitting in the front.
Yeah.
Next time.
Might have to think of that.
Yeah, if they're here. You know, most of the time, they're not.
They were waiting outside for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, we'll go on now to consent agenda.
Make a motion to approve.
I have a motion. Do I have a second?
Second.
Any questions? All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, like sign. Motion passes. Public hearing. This is the resolution to adopt the fiscal year 2020 budget. We need a call for comment for the audience. Is there anyone that wants to come and comment or question our budget? This would be the time.
Madam Chair, yes. Kevin Crawford's also here to give you just a brief summary of the fiscal year 2020 budget.
Madam Chair and good board, good afternoon. As Mr. Horton has mentioned to you, I would like to run over just some brief highlights of the budget that you have seen. It has not changed since the last time that we met, and you've seen these documents. But as you know, tonight is the night of the formal of adoption to take place. But I just wanted to look back very quickly at what we've talked about before and where we are tonight. April 3rd, we had our preliminary budget meeting, and we looked at capital and staffing and programs. And then on May 1st, again, we spoke, and we talked about the strategic planning for KUA and looked at capital and staffing a second time, as well as a five-year funding plan. And then June 5th, we met to talk about O&M expenses. And then today we are talking about the public hearing and to formally adopt the budget, as you desire. And then August 7th was the alternate budget public hearing date, if that was required. And then October 1 being the beginning of our fiscal year. Some of the highlights from the budget, and this is just to give you a very quick snapshot of how we arrived at where we are. This is based on our current fiscal policy that was set by you, the KUA board. That was modified slightly at our two previous meetings, and it's formalized. I think we had some language change that you all approved, and we're incorporating that into the budget document as a formal adoption of that modification of the policy. And we'll look at that again in a moment. The majority of the O&M, as I'll share with you just in a moment, is fuel. The majority of the remaining cost to KUA is our personnel within the O&M budget. Our O&M reflects no staffing increases projected over the five-year plan. Obviously, you're only adopting the one-year budget tonight for 2020, but as we showed you a couple meetings ago, looking out 5 years, we don't have any anticipated staff increases for that time horizon. There is no base rate increase projected over the five-year plan. However, the fuel and purchase power portion of rate will fluctuate with costs, as it always has, and then our rate stabilization will be required to achieve the bottom one-third goal, as we've shared with you also previously. Our commercial paper debt retired is now looking at to be retired over a six-year horizon as opposed to the original two. As Director Urbina shared with me after our last meeting and made a good observation that, you know, although we are delaying the payback of the commercial paper, by doing that we are employing the use of borrowed monies, but it will prevent us from having to issue additional debt by slowing that pay down back. So we'll utilize that over a six-year period instead of a payback period of 2 years. And so that moves us then into the budget portion, and I'll just kind of highlight the bigger numbers that you see in front of you here, as you've seen them all before in pretty good detail. Our metered sales revenues are anticipated to be $238 million. And then the biggest piece is our, one of the bigger pieces, our cost of power adjustment is budgeted at $52.2 million. And you add those sums together for the operating revenues, and that gives you $197,021,000 for our total operating revenue. Adding in our other operating revenues, you come up to total other sources of $22,388,000 from a flow of funds perspective. And that gives us a total anticipated revenue and other sources of $222,234,000, which foots exactly to the budget resolution that you will adopt this afternoon. Then looking into the expense side of the equation, you'll see for budget year FY20, fuel and purchase power, as I've stated previously, $123,071,000 for the biggest component of that total budget for expenses. Departmental O&M of around $38 million for all the departments across the organization. And just as a reminder, the budget document that you've seen doesn't reflect the recent organizational change. You'll see that in the fall when we start bringing you financials for that fiscal year. But given the timeline that we had to work with, we kept those organizations or those departmental organizations as they were for the budget document. And then capital improvements net outlay of $26.5 million for FY20. And that gives us total expenses and other uses that foot total to total revenues and other sources of $222,234,000, which is a balanced budget. The fiscal policies set by you, the board, these are all substantially very much the same. You had approved on the third bullet there the allowance for us if we utilized future capital outlay for any reason that we would have up to 5 years to reimburse that back. And then we did eliminate some old language. We eliminated the AMI requirement for funding since that AMI project is almost fully funded, and you eliminated that from the fiscal policy. And then I think there were some, or there were a couple of language cleanup for accounts that we no longer use, and so we eliminated those from fiscal policy just to make things nice and clean. And so having provided that information to you, Resolution 1904 authorizes the FY2020 budget of $222,234,000, assuming no base rate increase, authorizing 289 full-time equivalent positions, and we recommend as staff approval of resolution number 19-04, adopting the FY2020 annual budget. I stand for questions.
Are there any questions? If none, do we have a motion?
Make a motion to approve the...
Okay, we have two motions. Do you want to...
I'll second it.
Okay. We have a motion and a second. If there's nobody that wants to speak to it, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, like sign. Motion passes. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair. If I may take just a moment, I'd like to thank my staff for all the hard work they put into this. I get the privilege of sharing it with you, but they do all the hard work in putting the numbers together, so I'd like to thank them.
Yeah, we know that.
I'm just a pretty face, banged up a little bit today, but otherwise good. But thank you so much.
We're at the leaders' luncheon today, the county commission and everything, and they're just working on the budgets, and we've got ours done.
Yes, so. Ma'am. We will all sleep very well tonight. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Let's go on to our presentations. I think that's next. Is it next? Oh, resolution. No.
Informational presentations. We've got
two
organizations that have representatives here tonight that are recipients of KUA sponsorships, and Chris is going to introduce them so they can tell us a little bit about their organization and how they benefit our community.
Good afternoon. First, we have the Celebration Foundation and its executive director, Gloria Nice. And then following Gloria will be the Boys and Girls Club of Central Florida, and Mac Reed, their chief operations officer, will speak to you. So with that, Gloria.
Thank you for this opportunity. I appreciate being in front of you. Now, one thing I always start by saying, I have a little bit of an identity crisis. It's like a multiple personality disorder. Because when you think about the foundation, we do so much, people will say, oh, and you do that, and you do that, and you do that, because it's kind of disjointed, but it all makes sense. A little bit to begin with, the Celebration Foundation was founded in 1986 by Disney, and it was originally formed to do community building events for people moving to Celebration. In 2011, the board took a big change in direction, and they decided there was so much need in the community, we needed to do something to help others in Osceola County. So one of the first things that we did, and there's our thank you, so thank you for your support, we started feeding children. This was a grant that we got from Edith Bush Charitable Fund in February of 2012. And one of the funny things about this is it was a $10,000 gift. I had a minivan, and I thought, how am I going to go to Publix and fit $10,000 worth of food in my minivan? Well, obviously, that didn't happen. We have a partnership with Super Value. We had about 150 volunteers that day, and we packed food, and we got it to Osceola kids within 2 days. And that kind of led us on a journey that we became really good at coordinating people and getting people to help us with helping to feed other people in Osceola County. So we started doing a lentil rice meal packing event. And in May of 2012, we packed 250,000 rice lentil meals. And somebody, when I went out for funding, somebody said, what is Celebration going to do with 250,000 rice lentil meals? And I thought, huh, this isn't for Celebration. These meals that we packed over that weekend went to Council on Aging, they went to the Education Foundation, they went to the school district, they went to food pantries across Osceola County. But over that weekend, we were able to gather, we had four locations, we had 1,500 volunteers, we raised $62,000, and we delivered those meals. We did that for 3 years. In 2015, Osceola County came back to us and said, we're getting a little bit tired of those rice lentil meals. How about you do something else? So we started packing snacks. And it's hard to tell from this picture, but this next picture, I totally underestimated how much cardboard we had to deal with. But we packed 28 pallets of snacks, including, and you can see it's pudding cups, little Vienna sausages, cheese crackers, peanut butter crackers, and then working with the Osceola School District, they went to kids throughout Osceola County. And here you can see like the result of one of the kids. And to us, it's amazing what a little bag of snacks can mean to a child. One of our programs that we started also in 2012 is Learning Without Hunger. We were approached by BB&T. BB&T said, we'll give you $200,000 to feed children in Osceola County. And we said, okay. So we formed a group of partners called Osceola Connected, and we started providing weekend food, just weekend food, to elementary children in Osceola County. On average, we help provide weekend food to over 1,000 kids every week in Osceola County, and that's still happening. And that's what I mean. It's a quiet thing. People don't even know that we do it. We just do it. We raise the money. We buy the food by tractor trailer. We have it delivered to the school district warehouse. I have the schools call us and say we need a pallet, and we deliver a pallet. And then the schools work with partners and volunteers to help provide those little bags to those little kids across Osceola County. Here we are, 2019. We are still providing weekend food to about 1,200 kids in the Osceola County with our partners in Osceola Connected. So, and I bet you didn't even know that we did that. We also have done things like we took kids one summer to summer camp at Boys and Girls Club. What we're really good at doing, the Celebration Foundation, is we identify a need. Somebody will say that there's a problem. We identify a need. We convene people from the county, from Celebration, and then we develop a program. And there's criteria for the program. It has to be impactful. We can't duplicate a program that already exists. It has to be excellent, and it has to have a mix of supporting people in Celebration or supporting people in our county. We don't go outside of Osceola County. The following year, we took a bunch of kids to summer camp at Osceola Historical Society, and this is where we rented buses. We picked the kids up at hotels, a few different hotels in Osceola County. We delivered them to the camp. We paid for their camp. We paid for their field trips. We paid for their food. And that was something that the foundation did for several years. So all this led to a time, you can't read this letter, but in 2012, again, going back to the beginning, we decided to offer a scholarship to students, FIT students, or families in transition students. This one broke my heart. This is from a teacher at Gateway that was recommending one of her students, and it's blacked out, so, you know, it protected her privacy, where we were offering to send them to Valencia or to TECO, OTEC. And this particular story, it was a story of a young girl who was living in her car. I have a daughter, and I was thinking what it would be like if my daughter had to live in a car, and she was embarrassed. This woman, this young girl, was embarrassed to ask for help, but she wanted to go to college. She wanted to do something better with her life. Of course we were going to give her a scholarship. We could never find her again. Her cell phone went dead. The school couldn't reach her. She kind of disappeared. Broke my heart. Broke my heart so much that I was crying for nights about this one. So what we did, we started a program called Campus Express, where we started taking kids on campus tours of OTEC. Again, I'm a big believer in, I love OTEC. It's the best kept secret in Osceola County. We are good partners with OTEC. We also started taking them to Valencia College. Dr. Plinsky is a fan of the foundation because we said for these kids, in order to go to college, they have to see it. They have to be on campus. They don't know what a college looks like until they see it. Over the course of 5 years, we took 6,500 kids on campus tours, and we helped boost the college-going rates, working with Valencia and a lot of other programs that they had to help get kids who first generation, living in poverty, but getting them to see what college could be all about. That program was so successful that the Osceola School District took it over, and now they manage Campus Express. But here's another picture. You can see what a difference it makes when the kids go on the campus. They first go on and they're like, they're not quite sure where what they're doing there. This is a bunch of kids at Valencia with transition coordinators. And then all of a sudden we start talking to them about this is your future. This is your choice. You can come to college. And we tell them that how it can be possible through grants and scholarship. We also identify issues that encourage action in celebration. And again, our programs have to have a mix of supporting our community of celebration and supporting Osceola County. So some are for the whole county and some are for celebration. We have senior citizens in celebration that were living alone, had been there for maybe 20 years and didn't have family around. They were getting older. And we started a program called Thriving in Place, which helps them stay in their own homes, living independent, safe, productive lives. We provide transportation. KUA came out and spoke. We do lunches on Friday where we provide lunch and we bring a speaker in and they learn, in this case, they learned about hurricane preparedness. But that's not what's important about it. What's important about it is that it gives them the opportunity to interact with each other. It gives them a reason. They'll say, oh, it gives me a reason for getting up in the morning to come and see my friends. We do yoga. We do Tai Chi. We go on excursions. And for some people, it's the only time that they leave celebration. We also have lifelong learning. And if you've read any of the reports, that engagement is what's going to keep you healthier as you get older. So we have lifelong learning, which is everything from wine appreciation, which is very popular, to Disney, which is also very popular. But it also might be on financial management as you get older, or Social Security, or, you know, another important topic. And again, besides helping to provide weekend food for children, WINGS is Women's Initiative Nurturing Girls' Strength. This is an ongoing program where we help. And I don't know if any of you have granddaughters or daughters, but I used to say that it was my daughter against me. It was me against Britney Spears, where I would try to tell my daughter to act or believe in herself in a certain way. And she was like, she trusted Britney Spears better. Luckily, my daughter grew up to be a wonderful young woman. But around the time we started WINGS, it was Miley Cyrus. And the media messaging to girls is so negative. And we decided that we needed to give them more positive messages. This particular event was, we had 130 seventh grade students from across Osceola County that we did peace in social media. And we talked to them about how to be kind and how to be empathetic and how to be grateful. And we had the Osceola Sheriff's Department and Kissimmee Police Department involved. We also give out scholarships. We've given out over $100,000 in scholarships, and our Celebration High School is a mix of students from across the county. We also have a program called New Urbanism. If you know Celebration, we're based on New Urbanist principles. And trust me, I didn't know what New Urbanism was when I started. But there's a whole philosophy around the way communities are built. And you can see this is a presentation we did with Michael Eisner and Peter Rummel a few years ago, who talked about all the planning that went into creating a town like Celebration. We also have a concert series, and this is one of my favorite pictures. It's Bumper Jackson's performing last year. But you'll see the two boys with the saxophones, and they're Celebration High School students. And you can see the look of relief on Ethan's face, because Bumper Jackson's took him aside, and he said, why don't you perform one of the songs with us? And so the boys got up, and they performed, and you can see he said it was the best moment of his life and the worst moment of his life. So I just really love this picture. But our concert series, really, we do. Last year we had OXA perform. We had Celebration High School perform. We really try to engage lots of kids in loving music. This is Branford Marsalis, big name in jazz. We did a talk back with kids from across the county so that they could be in a room with Branford Marsalis and learn about the passion for becoming a musician. And how do we fund all this? Well, going back to BB&T, the $200,000 that they gave us to help provide food, or any of the money that we raised for food, the BB&T grant, and I can leave you the accounting for it, it was $200,000. We spent $199,730 on direct service for the children. So that went to food. It did. There was some administrative costs in terms of wire transfer, but that all went back to helping to provide for those children. If we get money to provide weekend food, 100% of it goes to the children. Summer camps, 100% of it goes to the kids. Whatever we raise for kids goes to kids. But we have a holiday home tour. We do a gala. We raise money in other ways in order so that when we make a commitment to provide for children in the county, we meet that commitment 100%. So that's a little bit about the Celebration Foundation. And our new mission statement is building better community through the arts, culture, and education. Arts and education are pretty self-explanatory. By culture, we mean we want to be a caring community, and we want to reach out and help others that need help. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any comments or questions?
No, it's fine. Nobody.
We just appreciate you coming in. And we have Boys and Girls Club.
Yes. Good afternoon. My name is Mac Reed. I have the honor and privilege of serving as the Chief Operations Officer for Boys and Girls Clubs of Central Florida. And I'm really excited to be here today because about half of my tenure, I've been with Boys and Girls Clubs about 20 years now, and almost half of my tenure was right here in Osceola County back in 2001. I was had the opportunity to come and be the club director of the old club on Thacker Avenue. Where sometimes when it rained outside, it rained inside, and we were held together with some Band-Aid and duct tape. But we did a phenomenal job of reaching as many kids as we could. Made a lot of great accomplishments and positive impact. And my most fond memory, I think, of I had many interactions late at night here at KUA when after our teen bus route or after late field trips, you were gracious enough to allow us to park our vehicle here. So many late nights I was retrieving my vehicle from the parking lot. So thank you all for the decades, really, of support that you've provided for Boys and Girls Clubs. Our organization is a youth development program services organization that provides programming for 6 through 18 year olds. We are a facility-based program. We have full and part-time staff that work with our kids. Currently, Nico and his team are operating our summer program right around the corner here. They're open from 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. Our after-school program runs from after-school until 9 p.m. Monday through Friday for the teenagers in the community. If anyone's ever, I've seen a couple of you I know have been in the clubs before, and I recognize, but if anyone would ever like to see a tour, there's no better way than to come to the club and see firsthand. Probably better, should have had one of our teens really here speaking with you today. Would have been a much more inspirational message than myself. But I am a product of Boys and Girls Club myself, and so I've benefited from the program, and I see firsthand the impact that it has in the community. So with the involvement with KUA, you know, obviously, you know, you all have supported our organization in a considerable way financially over the years. But I really can't think of another corporate entity that is as engaged on the street level with our kids as you are here at KUA. There's a long laundry list of things that, you know, we partner with together throughout the year. I just want to kind of mention just a couple to give that recognition. The Career Days is always just an amazing experience for our team members to be able to come here and learn about careers and that they would never otherwise have thought of or been exposed to. I know we've done that 5 or 6 times. I always look forward to the pictures and the gallery that Chris sends out to all the leadership. So thank you all for making the dedication and the commitment to provide that opportunity for our kids. Anytime the grill gets over to the club, of course, the kids are having a great time on that. You know, there's been donation items for fundraisers that have been contributed through KUA. We've got a Run Disney team that's sponsored through KUA. Thrift store donations, Christmas wish lists, all kinds of ways that KUA is engaging with the Boys and Girls Club year-round. And I couldn't talk about the engagement of KUA and Boys and Girls Club without thanking Susan Postens, who's been an amazing advocate and ambassador for our kids at the club. I know there's been blood, sweat, and tears from Susan put into the club. And, you know, we're just very thankful for you and everything that you've provided, leadership and guidance, not only to the board, but for the kids. And thank you all for allowing, you know, Susan to pour that passion and energy back into the kids. It's truly making an amazing difference and impact at the club. So what kind of results do we have, right? So I'd like to brag a little bit about Nico, and Nico is our service director. He runs the club on a daily basis. He's serving over 1,400 kids on an annual basis. That's our membership number right now. There's still a month to go in our membership year. So that is the most out of any club in our system. We have 35 Boys and Girls Clubs in a 7-county footprint as part of Boys and Girls Clubs of Central Florida. So out of all of those clubs, you know, Nico and the team here are serving the most kids at their club.
Are those individual? Those are all individual, not repeat.
Correct. Yes, every year we start from zero and re-enroll. There could be some repeating, but every year it's an original number. So that's 1,400 kids. His average daily attendance, another metric that we really take seriously, last month in June, 290 kids on an average, on a daily basis, are attending the club. That's also the highest out of any club in our system. They're really doing a great job. And obviously of our membership base, the teens are really important to us. We want to make sure that they're, you know, off the street, engaged in positive activities. He had over 100 teens a day, well over 100 teens a day, actually, attending the club on a daily basis. So I really would encourage, if you haven't seen it yet, please come by and take a tour, either get with myself or Susan, and we can arrange for you to come and see it in action, because it's really like a fine-tuned machine. There's so many amazing programs going on, amazing adult role models providing guidance, volunteers coming in to help support Nico and his team. So it's truly a village helping to raise our kids. In closing, I would just like to say thank you again for the love, the support, the guidance that you've shown to our organization over the years. I experienced it firsthand when I was running the Osceola Club on Thacker Avenue, and I've only seen it grow and expand over the years. We've got a lot of big goals to accomplish, but we always know we can count on KUA to be right by our side and with our kids. So thank you so much, and we just couldn't do it without you. So thank you.
Thank you.
Well, thank you. Thank you for both
of you,
both organizations.
No, we were applauding you. So, okay, we're going to go to providing low-cost, reliable, and clean power for Kissimmee.
Yes, Madam Chair, a few months ago, FMPA CEO Jacob Williams provided a presentation on the benefits and value of KUA to the City of Kissimmee Commission, and at the request of a board member, we've asked him to come in and provide this board with that same presentation. So thank you, Jacob.
All right. Thank you, Brian. Thank you, Chairwoman, and the rest of the commission. It's an honor to be here, and it's great to tell the story, really your story. We're nothing more than telling your story. So I'm going to condense this down in respect to time. You know a lot about FMPA, so we don't need to go through that. But I do want to stop right here on slide four and talk about one of the big things that we together are quite proud of is the low-cost power and the fact that we can't do that without generators that are always available and running. Your two facilities here, Kane Island 3 and 4, are part of the backbone of the system. Between those two plants and Treasure Coast, they make up 75% of our energy comes from those three units. Last year, again, we had availability that was above the national average for all three units. Now you go, oh, ho-hum, what does that mean? Well, what it really means is 10 of the last 11 years, this fleet has beat the national average. And this isn't the municipal national average. This is the average against the FPLs, the Dukes, the Amerins, the AEPs, all the major utilities. So outstanding work to Larry, the team, Jason, and Alt-J and everyone who's there to keep the plant running. That's part of the reason why we can provide low-cost power. With that, what the best gift you can provide your community here is providing them low-cost power that's reliable and clean, low-cost being the key. Because if you provide low-cost, then families have disposable income to spend on other things. We've talked about this before in Florida, and your demographics kind of matches that. Roughly a third of the people of Florida pay 10% of their disposable income to pay the electric bill. That's just because a lot of fixed-income families that move to Florida, plus the normal mix of low-income families that are here. We use a lot of electricity. We all know that. Kissimmee's average income is around $34,000 on a basis, compared to Florida average, about $50,000. So you've got a lot of families that rely on having low-cost power to do that. And because of that, the focus is very much that you and all the communities put on FMPA is providing low-cost power. Last year, we set the lowest-cost power to our members in 15 years. This is the prices over the last 10, right at under $72 a megawatt hour or 7 cents a kilowatt hour to you all, and quite proud of that. What that has meant is that Kissimmee has taken those low costs and turned it into quite an advantage. Your customers pay $20 million a year less for electricity than if they were on the IOU that's next door to you. That's $20 million that this community benefits. So you can write a check for $5,000 and $10,000. That's $20 million that everyone sees. If you think about it, average families takes home they keep $250 to themselves to spend on other things. That's the greatest gift you can give to all these families is low-cost power, and you all do that. So it's just not low-cost power. The other part of the value proposition you have is you provide a big transfer to the city, far more than investor-owned utility or the economic impact that you provide, faster restoration and outages, and also the sponsorship. You all talk about this regularly, all the sponsorships you do. You know this far better than I, but there's a value there. Quickly, you guys just approved the budget, 289 people. Do you realize the economic value of those 289 people? If there was not this utility here, or if it was part of a big utility, these people probably wouldn't live here. But because they do, there's $13.5 million of economic value that are spent right here in Kissimmee and Osceola County. And that's quite a thing that's added on top of the low-cost power. Couple that with around $16.7 million of transfer to the city, well above what another utility would pay to the city, because the franchise fee would be significantly less than that. If it was just a straight-up franchise fee. That's quite a value that this utility provides the community, and it's a great thing. Obviously, we've talked about all the community activities that go on. I mean, the community in the park. I don't know what value you put on the movie in the park, but it's one of the neatest things that you see going is how many people come together and all the things that you provide, scholarships and the funds that you provide regularly there. And obviously the local control when you have citizens are able to come here. The last piece is on reliability. Your system is far more reliable than the neighboring areas. During Irma, you remember a few years ago, much faster response time. But it's not just during hurricanes. During day-to-day activity are the if you compare to the neighboring IOU, your outages are half the length. The duration of the outage is half the time. Your repair time is much faster, and the frequency of outages are much lower. What more can you ask for? That turns into real dollars. That turns into $2 to $3 million of value, according to many studies, annually that's there. So when you add it up all together, it's like $42 million annually that the utility is giving to the community that you would not give otherwise. And so just want to commend you for that. Everyone should be quite proud of this asset. It's truly an asset of the community. And thank you for helping, allowing us to be a part of that. We want to continue to make it better so you even have lower rates and can do more value to the community. So with that, any questions?
Thank you for telling us how great we are.
Well, and when I first heard this presentation, we all kind of put it together using us as your guinea pig.
Yes.
So I heard it at policymakers, and it really, the dollars that we put back into our economy are really pretty amazing. And several other utilities have taken this information. They put the numbers together for them, and they've used it in their community to get the word out.
Absolutely.
And I don't know exactly how they've done it till it hits home to the poor guy paying his bill. But I wish we could, I don't know, send out a factoid every so often on our feed or whatever. And you do some of that kind of stuff, but I don't know how we can get across our value.
I'll tell you, one of the places that was interesting was up in Marion County for Ocala.
Yeah.
Marion County, the Chamber of Commerce, we spoke before the entire chamber. And everyone around Marion County essentially has Ocala as a utility. And so you had all the business owners. I mean, it's 150, 200 people there. And they said, oh, my gosh, I didn't know that this utility was adding that much value to the community. And, you know, Ocala, the people of Ocala were delighted. The city council, the board members were delighted. So those are the kinds of things that these tools are there for you to use because, you know, the mayor had us before the city council. It was a rush day in that. But, you know, in some of the business community, those are the ones who really should hear this story because they're the ones who see the benefit and can tell the story. So.
Yeah, Ocala was going on and on about how much good this presentation had done their community.
People came up afterwards and they were going, Mayor, I didn't know this was so good. You know, we just think of it as just this utility. Right.
Yeah.
So it's a tool for you. And we offer it out whenever needed. So thank you.
Thank you. Should we go on to old business?
Yes,
number
ma'am.
One.
Yes, ma'am. This first item involves a recommendation to modify KUA board policy number 1501 governing KUA business expenses. The recommendations aimed at bringing KUA more in line with other agency policies and best practices related to business travel, rates of payment and reimbursement, and Kevin Crawford's here to discuss it, this item in a little more detail.
Madam Chair, thank you. As Brian mentioned, the current policy that KUA has with respect to reimbursement of folks traveling on for business for KUA is to utilize a website called the Runtimer's Guide to Daily Travel Prices. And I guess the story originates about a month or so ago. Grant and I were looking at the travel policy to try to find ways to improve it because it was an older policy and there's always room for improvement and things change. And so we started looking at it, and what we realized was that we had a real opportunity here to reduce some compliance risk by moving away from the Runtimer's Guide to Daily Travel Prices and to move to the GSA rates that are currently being used by our peers and which are technically mandated by the IRS and governing bodies who have the purview of these type of expense reimbursements. And so given that background and our opportunity that we felt for compliance and reduced risk, we'd like to recommend a proposal to you, two changes to the policy, basically, and they're outlined here in red for you, and basically the elimination of the Runtimer's Guide to Daily Travel Prices to switch to the Federal General Services Administration Meals and Incidental Expense Breakdown, which is also a website that is constructed similarly to the Runtimer's, where you put in your locale of travel and it will give you what the federal government allows for, the IRS allows for per diem for that rate or for that locale. And then additionally, because we felt as though we didn't want this to create a burden on board members, because when staff travels for KUA, they generally have some discretion about the locations that they go for training, and you can generally move away from a higher cost locale to somewhere that's a lower cost. The board doesn't have that opportunity. You are somewhat constrained to the places that the conferences take place, and a lot of times those are in more expensive locales. And so realizing that, and sort of the punchline to this, with the GSA rates typically run a little bit lower than what you'd see on Runtimers for reimbursement. Anywhere from 15 to 30% lower is what you would typically see. And so given that, for board members only, we wanted to modify this policy as well to include the additionally, KOA board members may elect to be reimbursed for the actual, and the IRS defines that as reasonable and necessary, cost of their meals when traveling for KUA business, as long as receipts are provided. And some of you who've worked in businesses and have your own businesses probably know that the IRS really has two modes of reimbursement when it comes to meals. You can use a per diem rate, which is the GSA rate, or you can use actual receipts. And what we would propose to do is that for staff members, they would get the GSA rate, but for board, provide you the opportunity to use the GSA rate or to turn in actual receipts for meals, because we didn't want you to have to subsidize your own travel at locales that you don't get to select where you go. So that is our proposed changes, and I'm happy to stand for any questions you may have on that, but we basically, as staff, recommend approval of these changes, the modification of policy directive on business expense.
Are there any questions?
No.
I have one.
Yes, ma'am.
Can you go back one?
Yes.
Too far.
To the modified page?
Yeah, please.
Yes, okay. Ma'am.
And it says, additionally, with the KUA board members may elect to be reimbursed for the actual reasonable necessary cost of meals when traveling for KUA business, as long as receipts are provided. Now, we could have receipts for lobster dinners, and those are not reasonable and necessary, right?
Thank you, Madam Chair. That is absolutely correct. The IRS is the language in parentheses, their reasonable and necessary, comes from the IRS guidelines, but you're absolutely correct. Anything, I think they call it lavish and extravagant, which I would imagine something like a lobster would fall into that category. So, yes, ma'am, things that we normally eat in a normal meal I think would not be an issue. But as you know, I think most of us have a good general sense of what, you know, was a lavish expense.
I just wanted to make sure that that is ingrained in this policy.
Yes, ma'am.
Even don't assume we understand it. Just make sure that whoever reads it understands it.
Thank you very much. We'll make sure that gets included in the policy.
Okay. Thank you. That's it. Okay.
I was just going to say, I guess, pardon my fault, I always assumed that we were under the GSA, because I've always operated in the military and the other boards that I was on the GSA, so I assumed we were in that. So I absolutely no problem with converting into the GSA.
Great.
Policy.
Thank you.
Okay. We may have a motion to accept this directive.
I make a motion to accept.
Do I have a second? Right. We have a motion and a second. The right-hand side of this room is really active today. All in favor?
We're not quick enough over here.
Not snap to it. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, like sign. Motion passes unanimously. Thank you, Kevin.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And we have another one.
Yes, ma'am. The second item under old business. Last month, we brought you a recommendation to the board for an amendment to the KUA bylaws to include language governing live streaming of KUA meetings. At the direction of the board staff, it has gone back and revised that language and the recommendation to address some concerns that we heard at the last board meeting. And General Counsel Grant Lassert is here to walk us through those changes.
Thank you, Mr. President, Madam Chair, board members, good evening. Yes, at the last meeting in June, we had a good, robust discussion about the issue. And what staff took from that is that we wanted to maintain maximum flexibility for the board, because technically the board is not required to live stream any meeting. But there did seem to be a consensus that regular meetings made sense to live stream, and the city does live stream its regular meetings. So what we want to do, and there's also the issue that there may come a time, someday in the future, where there's a special meeting or a workshop on an item, say, on solar or something else, where the board wanted the live stream, wanted to maximize the public's ability to see the meeting. So we thought the best thing to do would be to change the resolution to just allow the board at its discretion to live stream meetings in general. It doesn't matter what type. But pursuant to this resolution and at this meeting, the board would direct staff to go ahead and start the live streaming of regular meetings as soon as technical and regulatory standards were met, and that we could do it at a reasonable cost.
Okay.
If I can see the recommendation, thank you.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah. So that's our recommendation. We recommend that the board adopt attached resolution number 19-03, revising the KUA bylaws to establish that the board may live stream its meetings at its discretion on the web or via appropriate social media. Staff further recommends the board direct staff to commence live streaming regular meetings.
Okay, are there any questions about this? Are we all comfortable with what they've brought back to us?
Yeah, that's what we requested, yeah.
Okay, it is exactly what we want, right?
Mm-hmm.
May I have a motion to accept it? I make that motion.
Do I have a second?
Isaac. We have a second on the right-hand side again. It's been moved and seconded. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, like sign. It passes.
Thank you.
Thank you. Go to new business.
Yes, ma'am. This first item is recommending award of contracts for electrical rehabilitation services associated with our deployment of the AMI project, and Susan Poston is here to talk to us a little bit about that.
So, good afternoon. Yes, as staff was preparing to deploy the AMI meters throughout our system, we did identify an opportunity to make the impact to our customers as minimal as possible. And so we looked at getting electrical contractors to be available for us in case, as during the exchange, we identified problems with the meter base and it needed to be repaired before we could initiate service again for the customers. So that's what this is about. Obviously, the whole project is a customer focus, and that's what this is driving this. We have an excellent opportunity to look at our entire system while deploying these meters. We're going to get an opportunity to look at every single meter base in our system, which is wonderful for the health of our system and for our community. And during these inspections, we know that we will come across some problems, and these are things that we've learned from the other companies. You know, it's nice going later, launching this technology after many other companies have done it, because we've been able to learn from their lessons, and so that's what we're doing. And obviously, we're trying to keep the project moving forward. So, first of all, let me assure you that we are not going to repair things that we can see before we touch a meter. So these are three examples of problems that we would see, and we would contact the customer and tell them that it's their responsibility to get this repaired. So the first picture is a bent riser. It appears that the service wire is actually touching the home, so we would be contacting the customer and asking them to get that repaired before we would upgrade their meter. Picture two shows where the meter can is not attached to the backer board, so that would need to be repaired by the customer. And picture three shows a number of problems. The meter can is not attached, but also the load side wires are disconnected from the customer's panel, so obviously we would not be installing a new meter there, and we would instruct the customer that they need to get that repaired as well.
Listen, I have a question. We've been talking about changing how we do business in a way and things we can do. Is this something that we can offer the customers to do themselves?
To do ourselves or for them to do?
No, to help them with the repairs and charge them for it.
Well, we could.
I mean, I just... This is something we can...
We could. What we typically do is assist them through the process. So basically, we contact them if they need to know which electricians to contact. We certainly can do that. With these contractors on board, we certainly could tell them that, you know, we could get one of these contractors to come there very quickly. The bottom line is we're not going to touch these, so we're not going to interrupt their service. So they have time to get it fixed, and we'll come back to them after it's fixed. So as soon as they get these repairs made, we will come back to them.
So it's actually better if we don't touch them. We
it is
have
the
cu- them come in and get somebody to do it.
It is the customer's equipment, but here's the flip side. Let me show you the next one. So these are things that we would not see until we pulled the meter. And as you know, when we pull the meter, the service is off. So at this point in time, we pull the meter, and the first picture, I have to make sure I say this right, the line side jaws are broken, okay? So as soon as we see that, we cannot put a meter back in there. It's not safe. We're not going to. So this means that as of right now, because we're upgrading our system, they're without power. So this is when we would call in this electrical contractor and have them follow us. They would repair it timely. We would get the service back on as quickly as possible, but the impact to the customer would be minimal. The right photo shows some discoloration. That's due to overheating and corrosion. So these are things that we absolutely cannot see until we pull that meter. But once we pull that meter, that customer is without power. And because we are initiating the upgrade, we, along with a lot of other utilities that we've spoken to, have determined that it's best for us to have an electrical contractor ready to follow us to get it taken care of as quickly as possible to get this customer service back on, because this is our project. This is our upgrade.
Are you talking actually riding with our people?
No.
We're talking within an hour they can be out there?
Well, they're on call, and that's why you'll see in the recommendation that we have two, because we are recommending a primary and a secondary. The primary is the lowest cost, but depending on how many of these we have and how quickly they can respond, if they're not able to respond quickly enough, that's why we want to have a secondary one. So our plan is that they would be there hopefully within an hour, but you have to realize we need to get our service crew there to de-energize the system so the electrician can do the work. So it's an effort. Let's just put it that way. It's an effort. Yes.
Is this our equipment?
The meter can is not. It is not our equipment, which is why typically we have the customers do the repair. However, because we are initiating all of this work, if we never touched these, it would still be working. As soon as we pulled it and we saw it, because of safety, we don't put a meter back in and we will not re-energize.
So we will pay for the repair.
We will pay for the repair if it's one of these. We will pay for
the repair. Customer.
I'm sorry?
We won't bill the customer.
No, we will not bill the customer. That's what this recommendation is about.
Do you have a sense of how many you'll be repairing?
That's a great segue. There we go.
Oh. Did you all talk?
No,
it's in here.
I appreciate it. It is in there. So, and this is an estimate, and it's been very difficult to get a handle on exactly what this would be, but we're estimating approximately 2% of our customers may need some repair. We're hoping it's less. And keep in mind, these are customers that we pull the meter before we see it needs repair. If we see it needs repair before we touch anything, then the customer, just like now, they need to get it repaired themselves. So, and an average cost, another estimate is $400 per. Yes?
Do we accept any liability when we're working on their equipment?
The electrician actually does.
Okay.
So the electrician is actually doing the work. And our plan is to have the electrician, when this is finished, either the electrician or whoever puts the meter back in, the new meter in, will leave a door hanger letting them know which electrical contractor did the work and basically telling them, this is your equipment. We fixed it, but this is your equipment. And so kind of making that final disconnect, and Grant is going to help us with the wording on that.
So if the house burns down after it's in...
The electrician.
We'd have no... Okay.
Yeah.
My question is, they will be told beforehand that this is going to be done?
Well, ideally. So the plan right now is, just as we do today, anytime we exchange a meter, we knock on the door. The customer's there. That's great. We tell them that we're going to interrupt service for a very short period of time. We're upgrading their meter. We're going to exchange the meter. If we find there is a problem, then we will go and knock on the door and tell the customer there is a problem. We're bringing an electrician in, and we're going to have them go ahead and repair the problem for you. We're going to pay for it. We'll get your service back on as fast as possible. If the customer is not there when we knock on the door and we discover this, we will try to reach them by phone, the numbers that we have. In the meantime, the process will already be starting. We will have already contacted the electrician. We will contact our service department to de-energize the system. So we'll get all of that rolling, but we will do everything we can to notify the customer. Either way, when we finish, there will be a written notification to the customer exactly what was done and why and what electrician did it, and explaining that this meter base is theirs.
So we're not giving an opportunity to the customer to reject the new meter? I thought this was a voluntary program.
We are not offering that opportunity. If we knock on the door and the customer says no, then we will have them meet with one of our energy conservation specialists to discuss their reasons, just to make sure that they know the facts and they're not basing their decision on fiction, and also to make sure that they understand there's an additional fee to opt out of this. So that will be a personal interaction. We will just leave that meter. If the customer says no, we're just going to leave it and go on to the next one, and have one of our energy conservation specialists contact and speak with the customer.
Susan, we have all sorts of questions.
Susan, in the instance of the three houses over the first example, based on the type of home, I would say those customers are low-income housing?
Well, those are samples, and they may be, and so it may be a... the property owner or property management that need to get it repaired. But we needed to draw the line somewhere. And so we drew the line where if we can see it, just like now, just like today, it's the customer's responsibility. And we'll skip it. They have as much time as they need to get it fixed. We'll go back to them at the end of the project, which could be a couple of years.
I know, but the question was, if they are low income, families, and they're fine the way they are, they're going to say, well, don't change it. I'm fine the way it is.
And that's fine. And then they'll have to, at the end of the project, if they still don't get it fixed, they'll have to opt out, and they'll have to pay the additional fee for opting out, because we'll have to continue to manually read and drive out there and reconnect that service, and they'll have to pay for that. But they've got a long period of time. We're going to do everything we can, like we always do, to work with the customers and help them. They've got a long period of time to, you know, to take care of it. It's not like they have to do it today.
Ray, how much is the fee for opting out?
$15 a month.
Yeah.
I have a couple of questions. First one is, will there be public notice using newspapers or some media to get the word out to them?
We are going to use our bills, where we can now put the messaging only on the customers that are being impacted. And the month prior, we're going to let them know that we're going to be in their area upgrading meters. And so the message will be in the front across the bill or on the back side of the bill. So every customer will be notified, but only those that are coming up, because there's no need for customers that aren't on the schedule for 30 months, you know, to...
Now, is that only for people that get the paper bills or the electronic bills?
It should be on the electronic bill as well.
I get nothing other than the bill.
Okay.
We can also do some door hangers.
Yeah. Well.
Form of notification as well.
Yeah, all of these things get expensive and time-consuming and you know, so.
Well, I was just thinking, mailing, you know who's going to be, where you're going to be.
And again, it gets expensive. You know, it's 80,000 mail pieces. you know.
But that's not all at once. That's just your...
Right, but it still is expensive. We can do anything, and I'll get with Chris, and we'll get with Pinnacle about, or we'll get with our vendor about the electronic bills and Jeff, and we'll make sure that this message is shown on the e-bill for the e-bill customers.
Because it's not fair for them to have to make the decision when somebody shows up the door knocking at their door saying, I want to do this. They need to have pre-knowledge of what's going on.
Well, and I will tell you, we are doing that because that's the way KUA does business. Most utilities don't say anything. They just pop in, they change it and run. And we feel that we want to see our customers as much as we can.
Good. Thank you.
So.
Question. It's probably Grant. Probably you might be able to fill part of the question. You mentioned that we go out, we knock on the door, and if the individual is not there, you start the process. Mm-hmm. Could that be considered trespassing?
An excellent question, Madam Chair, Director Ortega. We discussed that. We do have the right to always to be on the property in reasonable hours to service our meters. We have that right pursuant to state law and our tariff and our policies. But when you are working on someone else's property, you can get into an issue as to trespass to the property. Our argument here would be that we have an obligation to serve, which we do. We have a statutory obligation to serve every customer. And because this is initiated by us, in order to avoid disrupting their service unreasonably, we are going to have someone there to fix the situation. The customer will be notified immediately, in many cases beforehand, but at least contemporaneous with what we're doing. And given the information as to who fixed it and why, and if there are any questions to
And since
to
call they us. Own those.
It is.
They own
they
those. Own it. So if you're taking one out, you're taking what they own out, right?
No, we own the meter, but the meter bases are owned by the customer.
Right. We're fixing the base. We're not taking it away from them. We're fixing it. We're actually adding value to their property. But it's a good question because, yes, Director.
I guess to Susan and to you at the same time, anytime we do an enhancement to our systems, and it's system-wise, and company-wide, it should be transparent to the customer. We should not penalize the customer because we're upgrading something.
That's why we're doing this.
And so if we're going there and we're knocking on the door and we're saying, you'll be out of power for 2 hours, whatever, which is fine, that makes them aware. But then if we find a problem, we fix it, and we put it back together, and we run, and that's it. The customer is happy because he had no problem except that a small interruption. But in the case of the other people, you knock on the door and you see the problem, and the customer says, I can't afford it right now, and I won't be able to afford it, and that is your problem, you're the one making the change.
And what we can do, because I understand your concern, what we can do is when we go back, if they still have problems, we can revisit this. You know, again, these are estimates and estimated costs, and this is kind of what we based our budget on, was only repairing these and not repairing the ones that we don't touch. You know, and it could be revisited, but there's a potential cost.
Madam Chair, the other thing that I think that we need to be mindful of is setting a precedence for equipment that we don't own, that we're not touching.
But we're doing some of it.
Well, in the case of the three pitchers, like the service wire, the meter housing off the wall, if we're not touching those equipment, we set that precedence that okay, KUA is going to pay for that. Then we may be on the hook going forward. Well, you did it then, and you there was no reason for you to do it. You're going to do it now.
We're talking about the first pictures.
Yeah, the first pictures, the service drop.
You're talking about the first pictures, the ones where there is an actual fix.
No, she was talking about the second picture.
I'm going to try.
Are you talking about this one, Director?
These ones. Which ones?
Well, these ones the customer might not be able to afford it at the time.
Right.
And maybe not even later, and be upset because you're causing the change. I'm fine the way I am. I don't need you to change me. I don't need to afford $15 for opting out, all of these different things. So how many of these complaints are we going to have?
We don't know.
And if we do the other ones, then we're doing it for some customers. We're not doing it for all.
But we're only taking responsibility for the ones that we touch.
I think the big difference, the first set of pictures, they don't lose power because
right.
nothing is done.
Right.
The second set of pictures, we cause them to lose
yes.
power, and the only way they can get power is to
get
fix
this repaired.
So,
but we could ask the customers to pay for that. Because
well, and I've thought about that too. Would we be better off to say we've got somebody, we're in mass volume, they can come in here, they can fix it, or you can choose a person, but you're going to be without power until it gets done, which is going to be a real issue for people. And you could do a payment agreement, but they're without power until it gets done. That, to me, is the big defining feature.
And they're without power because we are upgrading their meter. And, you know, there may be meters that have only been out there for 3 years, and typically we would leave them out there for 7 or 10. So 4 years ahead of schedule, we've chosen to upgrade their meter, and now they would be without power.
And I'm sure all this stuff is blind. There'd be no way to tell until you pull that thing out,
right.
and then you can't plug it back in.
Exactly.
You in can't even examples. Plug back in the old one, correct?
Mm-mm. We won't, for safety reasons.
The way I might compare it would be if you had a neighbor that had a fence, and it was right up, but not on your property line, and your kids did something to damage it to cause the paint to chip, and you painted it. I mean, technically, you would, you know, let the neighbor know I painted your fence. But a lot of it is we did it. We did it for a good reason. And we can't continue to provide your statutorily required service unless we do this, unless we fix it in a timely manner.
Ray, did you have more?
Oh, yeah. Going back to the low-income people, if there is a rate payer that is receiving subsidized assistance with their bills, would you be willing to offer some sort of make the repairs for them? Because if you know they're already being subsidized, they're not likely going to be able to cover the cost of repairs.
Well, I will tell you this. We work very hard to stay out of the social services mm-hmm. business. And we don't keep any of that information. We don't want any of that information about income. We don't want to make the decision on who should have it, who shouldn't. That's why we have Council on Aging do the Good Neighbor Fund. So that's kind of, we're hovering in that area that we really, that's not our area of expertise.
Yeah. And I have one last question, at least at this moment. What about the customers that need that, you come and you pull it out? And there's someone in the home that is on some sort of health care equipment
mm-hmm.
that requires it. How can that be addressed?
Well, we have our medical essential customers, and we will be giving them special notice of when we're coming. But if we don't know about them, very similar to what we tell our medical essential customers, you need to always have a backup plan in case service is interrupted. Now, if we can help, we can call 911 for you, whatever, but we encourage all of our customers, and we even tell all of our medical essential customers, we cannot guarantee uninterrupted power. So you always need to have a plan for when it goes out. But obviously, we're on property. We'll help if we can.
That's also the reason why the recommendation includes a primary and a secondary contractor.
Can we go back to the resolution so we can maybe go forward after a bit?
Can I maybe suggest that the people in the first picture, if we let them know that we can't give them a new meter and we check back a year later and they still can't afford a new meter, could we then later or whatever or then get them in touch with Council on Aging or wherever that they could get some subsidy, or even in the door hanger have information about where you could
absolutely.
Potentially have some funding.
Absolutely. You know, we work with these customers all the time, and we have all these conversations with them, and you know we're going to do everything we can to help them get there.
That's who we are.
Yes.
Grant, did you have a legal thing to say
to us? Just real quick, those first three examples where we see them, I would imagine some of those might present code enforcement issues as well.
Absolutely.
They might violate building codes.
Yeah, the first pictures we saw, yes.
Bless their hearts, I think they might have to fix it, whether we had anything to say about it or not.
Mm-hmm. And let's go back to the recommendation, and are we ready to vote on it, and do I have a motion?
Motion for this?
Don't we have to vote on this?
Yes,
that's what I thought.
Approval.
Yes.
It's approval.
I need a motion to approve.
Motion to approve.
And I'll second.
Yay. Okay. Been moved and seconded. All in favor say aye. Aye.
Aye.
All opposed, like sign. Motion passes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Yeah. I was going to. Were you going to say that? You want to talk about this?
Yeah. As he comes up
closer. I'm sorry.
Then we have situations like the previous people, the first people. I think we should discuss it further.
Yes, ma'am.
I think that's what we're at. We're asking so many questions because there's really no answers until we do it. So, okay, we do have another new business.
Yes, the second new business is an item recommending approval of an amendment to the current Schedule D of the TARP agreement between FMPA and KUA for the extension of Kane Islands Unit 1 and 2, currently set to expire in 2021 through 2026. And Larry Madden is here to discuss the item in greater detail.
Good evening, everyone, ladies and gentlemen. As you can see in the picture of Kane Island, the first two, the forefront unit 1 and 2, and as I've told you in a past meeting, that they're 25 years old in 2020, and they're in the center of the country club, and I can't get out. So,
ever.
So you want to take them out before 25?
So actually, we're going to take them in now and we're going to let them out. So the question was asked that night: could we maintain the machines up to the machines we have maintained them up to like new condition and have maintained that way the whole time down there? To give you a little history, back in 2008, we executed with FMPA the TARP agreement, the True All Requirements Agreement. It has a really long name, but that's pretty much what it does. It replaced the Capacity and Energy Sales Agreement. Reason we replace that every year, what we're talking about tonight, for 6 years, we did that every year. We would say, negotiate, what's the capacity credit? And each year we weren't sure what we were going to get. So we thought, well, let's get something that provides greater certainty of payments going forward to benefit us and both the organization, FMPA, which we're a member of the All Requirements Project. And the payments were fixed, and we aligned them with our debt obligations, which, as you know, these machines are paid off now. So when the agreement says when the fixed payment stream ends, doesn't mean the machine ends. So you can we had a way that we could actually a formula that would say what the capacity is worth based back on 2008 estimates. And FMPA, they could just say we want to retire it. Well, when we looked at what the market value is today, in real numbers, because we have a market, FMPA on our behalf is selling power to the market. And so we know that the value was actually less than what we're receiving today. We're receiving money above market now, so we're doing well to the end of this contract. But so what that does, it sends a price signal that says, shut the machines down. Well, that doesn't benefit us as an all requirements member because now we're losing that capacity, and it doesn't benefit us on getting a revenue stream. So we negotiated and came with a fixed payment for an additional 6 years. And as much as you can see this, if you could add all these up in here, that's just over $13 million for the total over the next 6 years.
Yeah, I got that.
I knew you did. I just wanted for everybody else in the room. So we saw the benefit here was that that we do extend out for the 6 years and that we receive $13 million of capacity for that. And on the other side, if we put our all requirements hat on, it also gives us a machine that's going to be there, two machines that will be there for our benefit. We're the largest member of all requirements, and that keeps it cost competitive for us on our rate. And also, we don't have to build another machine for another 6 years because it's there. And here's your recommended motion if you choose to go forward with this, or if you have questions, I'll answer them.
Questions of Larry? Do I have a motion?
So moved.
We have a motion. We have a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, like sign. Motion passes. Thank you, Larry. Who has the solar?
Yes, this Larry does as well. This is an item recommending approval for
forward
with FMPEA's solar project number 2 with a project commitment of 20 megawatts.
So Susan Schumann, sitting right there, runs the solar project for FMPEA, and she did. She's the one that brought you solar project 1, and this one is originally named solar project 2. And I've called this really smart solar, actually, from our last presentation for the 4 cent kilowatt hour. Well, I should call this really, really smart solar. But Susan came to us and said that they're building another large-scale project. It's going to be another 74.5 so that we can get the benefit of the scale. It's, again, like the last one, a 20-year purchase power agreement. So we have no risk. We just pay the bill. And the delivery on this will be 2023. It's out a little ways, but there's actually savings on to do that. And we figured maybe a 20-megawatt commitment size, something that wouldn't hurt us so much if it was a higher price. And when Susan brought this to us, we said no. We said 4 cents. We don't have all the stuff we have sold before, so the answer is no. It 4 cents, because if we don't sell it, it puts pressure on our rates. But Susan showed us other cities were interested. Just still couldn't put us over the top. Going back to that one, am I able to reverse this? Can you reverse me back?
Getting dizzy.
Okay, right there. Another thing about this solar project that does have value, if you see it's up at the top of the state, this is the three little suns up there, and you say, well, the ones we have now is in Osceola County. That's good for us. But also location of how the sun shines and how the clouds move over the state gives us more opportunities to have that solar delivered. So it actually is good to have these in different areas of the state. And we said, okay, we pay 2.6 cents per kilowatt hour. We've done that for the last 5 years on average. That's what we compared for the 4 cent solar. Thought it was pretty good. But Susan wouldn't leave us alone. So she comes back and says, how about if I give it to you for 3 cents or below? We're doing negotiations now that we could, it could be below 3 cents, but we figure delivery, we can get it at 3 cents. That's 0.4 cents over what our energy cost is. The reason staff's bringing this to you, it can be sold to our customers in that, but that's not the reason we brought. We brought that for competitive energy that's going to stay the same rate, very, very close to what we pay for energy today for 20 years. So that's the main purpose. We brought it to you to say, here's capacity at a fixed rate that's very competitive. Now, if we sell it to our customers in our solar program, that's fine too. And if there's any questions, I have a recommended motion for you. And this does not connect you to it that you've bought it. This is, Susan, take that 20 megawatts in those other 9 cities or 8 cities I showed you and negotiate to bring us the price that we think we're going to get. And then we'll bring you a contract at that point, and you'll have your final decision. So this is just to make the commitment so Susan can negotiate further.
So we do need a motion here.
Yes.
Are there questions? We have a motion. Do I have a second?
Second.
We have a motion second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, like sign. Passes. Go for it, Susan.
Thank you, Larry.
Okay. We're down to staff reports, and I think
we've got Chris Jen, who's going to do his semi-annual report.
And I know I'm between you and dinner, so I'll be speedy. Today we're just going to focus on, I thought it would be interesting just to kind of give you an update. We just recently hit 10 years that KUA has been on social media. So it's kind of we've got a decade under our belt. And so thought it would be interesting just to kind of see the impact that it's having. But I want to start with a short video just showing you the growing impact of just digital media in general.